Our first speaker is Tariq Mahmood. Tariq is a writer, is a lifelong campaigner. Tariq has also been charged with similar terrorist charges many, many, many years ago in the early 80s. Some of you who have gray hairs like mine will remember the Bradford 12 campaign. And he obviously relates, feels with this campaign very strongly. Tariq?
Stop knocking things over in my life. I probably wouldn't be out if it wasn't for Gareth, who's sitting next to me as well. But really, it's a pleasure to see so many old friends coming together. And it's been a very long time. I don't know where Jasbir got the lifelong campaigner from. But it's been a long time since I've started and got involved, in a way, involved in campaigning like we are doing. I live in Manchester. The campaign is called Justice for the Northwest 10. Most of them, in fact, all of them bar one, are from the northwest frontier of Pakistan. And they were also arrested in the northwest of England. And in a sense, one thing that has happened in Britain, and particularly around the northern cities, it's not an exaggeration to say that people are living in terror. Usually when you go to organize, I've organized a lot of meetings, and usually knock on doors and encourage people to come. I knocked on one door of a friend of mine, and he said, please take what money you want for the campaign, leave us alone, we can't afford to get involved in this sort of a thing. Now, we are living in a terror, but I'd like to take you a little bit back, what it means for people who send their children to England. If any of you have ever watched a Bollywood film, it's the place of romance. It's the place, where you come and sing and dance in open-air carriages of cars, and probably the prodigal son or daughter, when they return, will do well after being educated in Britain. These students, some of them are from lower middle-class families. Some of them, their families have literally sold the family silver to get their children to come and study in this country. Now, I was at home talking to a parent when these students had been arrested. And the father of one of the children said to me, what is going to happen to my children when they grow up? I said, yeah, it's not that bad. There's a long way to go. They're only 7 and 8 at the moment. And I think that really the fear in this situation wasn't something imaginary. But the organization of the campaign became very necessary, because we're dealing with an extraordinary situation in extraordinary times. The implications of those could be devastating for all of us here and catastrophic for people in overseas countries. And by that I mean this country is engaged in war of, I believe, a new colonial war. We are living in the so-called war on terror. These students are a direct living link in the arrest of people in Pakistan. Where they come from, there is a raging war going on. We are expecting some form of justice should they be deported to a country whose army can kick out 3.5 million people at the behest of an American-inspired war of occupation. In this country, we are being led into a dead end. A dead end that means that constant whipping up of racism, it cannot stop, it will not stop, it will engulf every single one of us in this room and our children to come, because like the old crusading wars of the past, there is no end in this war, because this is not a war in the conventional sense of armies fighting armies. It's an imperialist bloc of people out to colonize our world again. They cannot do this without creating poison in this country. I have had left-wing friends of mine who have said to me after the bombings in London, when are you going to bomb me? Are my eyes filled with tears at a comment of this? These were anti-racist. I won't name them. Maybe it was drink that had got to them. But these were friends who I was with, and I was so appalled by this situation, because in a sense, even in the eyes of our friends, we are slowly but surely being transformed into terrorists. Now, these arrests that take place in Manchester are not the first arrests that take place in Manchester. If you take your memories back, there was a plot once to blow up Old Trafford football ground by North Africans and Algerians and some other people from North Africa, I don't remember all the details of it. The police raided it in a blaze of publicity. And it was all over the world. When you see the stuff on your telescreens, you're not just seeing them in Britain. Millions, if not billions, of people across the world are seeing images of nasty Muslim terrorists living in Britain about to blow this place to smithereen. It's all over the world. But what people don't know is shortly after these people's lives were destroyed, they were given football tickets by the police to go watch the match at Old Trafford. Not very long ago, if you remember, there was a convoy of Viva Palestina going to take some humanitarian aid to Gaza. There was a terror raid on the M56, once again in a blaze of publicity, and these people were held up. What people never got to find out, actually the police bought them air tickets to go join the convoy later on in Tunisia, but that became by the by. The poison was in the act, the poison was in the raid. So when we saw the raids taking place, the image behind you, I too saw the images. If you go on our website, you read some of the newspapers that were appalling. The Daily Telegraph put forward an article which said the guy who's released, I forget his name now, he used to work near a chemical factory. I mean, oh my God. The fact that he worked near a chemical factory was equated very clearly with the fact that he was involved in some form of terror activity, which may or may not have involved a chemical factory. It was nothing of the sort. The Times and a few other newspapers, if you, again, the articles are all available for you to look at, have been mounting a campaign that some of these students, and these incidentally are picked up in Pakistan as well. We live in a very small world indeed. That these mounting campaigns, that these people were fiddling the immigration rules to come into this country, that they're not really all genuine students. I mean, we live in a remarkable country of fiddlers, where even the Home Secretary who withdraws the visas of these kids are watching pornos at our expense and fiddling, and British lawmakers, surely we don't have to go into any details now. The two things surely must be synonymous. Who didn't which student doesn't try to get through some loopholes? But that's not, again, very important. It's important insofar that the campaign of vilification continues. It tarnishes all students because they're talking about the fact that if you come from the northwest frontier province of Pakistan, then surely you're going to have something to do with terrorism somewhere on the world. There is a war going on in the northwest frontier of Pakistan, and there is a war going on in Britain. The wars are qualitative different. We are here fodder, a poisonous fodder for a machine. But let me go a little further. When we tried to organize our campaign, it was truly difficult to get people to come out and sit and talk to us, because they are genuinely scared what will happen to us. I managed to get one of my neighbors to come, and he keeps complaining that since he started attending the meetings, his mobile phones don't work anymore, and things have gone wrong. You know, I'm forever apologizing to him, but I say, look, it's too late now. You might as well help us to organize a little bit more. But in a sense, you know, one of the things is that I think that there are divisions within the British society, including divisions within the security forces that led to the arrests of these students. Not all of them were happy that the raid should take place. Another important thing is that they were never released. It's a misconception. They were never freed. They were held in prison. 2 weeks after they were held, the police declared them effectively to be innocent, and they were just locked up under an immigration administrative process. I'm not a lawyer, but I won't go into those things. The implications of that really doesn't take a genius to work out. If you withdraw the immigration of somebody, you're effectively, the state is saying this is a privilege, not a right. Then surely every right that the state has given us of naturalization, of citizenship, that too is a privilege. And any right can become a privilege. It can never end, this process of whereby you are arrested as terrorist on a charge which the highest political authority in this country says was a major terror plot averted.
That's what Gordon Brown maintained. Well, if they're terrorists, charge them. The photographs that these boys took in parks, the police went in Manchester and dug up the parks where the photographs were taken. They didn't find anything. We saw pictures of the family, gave me some pictures, and I said, I can't put these pictures up. I think it would be counterproductive. It had loads of young boys running around in the hills of Yorkshire, and they all had beards. And the brother said, well, you know, there's no girls there and no beard. Is that the problem? I said, well, it might be, but they probably look like terrorists on a training camp. And really, there were students out in fields, and in a sense, we've tried very hard to bring the humanity out of it, but this has been an extraordinarily difficult campaign to organize, primarily not only from fear, but the object, you know, the things that confront us as well. Let me take you a little bit further on into what the defendants think they were arrested for. Tariq ur Rahman, the guy who has gone back to Pakistan, I talked to him on a few occasions now, and he has no doubt, neither during the time when he gave his police, he has no doubt he was arrested because he is a Muslim. The problem for a lot of Pakistan, this is not a theological issue, this is not an issue of Islam versus the West, these are political issues. He is arrested for the fact that he's a Muslim. The universities are spying on teachers, students, and asked to spy on students. I'm sure you'll hear quite a lot of that. We live in a situation where we are completely infiltrated and by MI5 agents. Kids are being forced into a position of working for the intelligence service, so much so that in Birmingham and Manchester, they've started to organize secret meetings. What can we do to avoid being pressurized at becoming, you know, spooks or working for the spooks? It's a diabolical state of affairs. It's a state of affairs that is dividing. In fact, give you one anecdote before I move on. I have a very senior friend from the Jammu and Kashmir Liberation Front. His friend's son committed suicide, I think, in London about 4 or 5 months ago. The son has locked himself up in a room convinced that the friend who has died has become an agent for the secret services, and he's going around from police station to police station saying, my son is not dead, he's been recruited by secret services. Now, I don't know what the connection with all this is, but it surely says something to us about what Britain is doing to the minds of young men and women, and what it is doing is creating all levels of psychological and social problems. So Tariq ur Rahman says they're arresting us for Muslims. He's, you know, his cells are being sniffed at by dogs. After his visits to the solicitor, he's being strip searched as a Category A prisoner. And they don't need to do strip searches anymore. You go through the airport, your bones are seen. You don't need to do it other than a political campaign of humiliation and victimization. And the students were, so in one sense, firstly, a lot of people, we failed to explain to hardened campaigners in Manchester that actually the students are held not as terrorists, not a shred of evidence has been presented to them. Their defense solicitors knew nothing. Their defense barristers were not given any evidence because it was held in secret. Now, these secret courts used to exist in the colonies. Those of you who can stretch your memories to think of how Britain fought colonial wars, what they were doing in the colonies, they're actually beginning to do quite openly in this country. So in one sense, you know, the students are held on the charge of they have challenged their immigration, the order to deport. I won't go into the details of it. But the judge, referring to the police statement that these students are innocent, said actually that's a technicality. You know, it's not, you know, well, they're innocent, but we know they're not. Because he's seen some evidence that nobody else has seen any evidence. The important position over here is that the judge turned round to the student and says, this case might take on up to 18 months. You can go at any time you so choose. Tariq ur Rahman going back to Pakistan is due to the fact that he's a widower with three children. He has a choice of either remaining in prison for 18 months or going back to Pakistan. I could not remain in prison as a Category A prisoner. I would go back to my children. I met another family recently. Two of us did go over to Pakistan. We had 7 of the 10 defendants. One was a minor, an Afghan child. I think he's applied for asylum. One was released. 10 were left. One's going back. 9 are still in prison. 7 of the 10 had a press conference in Pakistan. And what, after the press conference, one of the parents asked me, my mother, one of the brothers of the students inside asked me, my mother is dying. She doesn't know the son is in jail. She just doesn't know where he is. He doesn't know the mother is dying. What shall I do? I said, bring him back. That's what I would do if he's my brother. And it was a very tense situation, because many of these mothers have, as I said, their dreams lie in the kids working overseas, let alone the fact there's a war zone and it's very tense. It wasn't very good before. So now it's their dreams, it's their lives, it's their aspirations, and it's their hopes. So in one sense, the families were very, very concerned. They tried to unite. And in order for 7 of the 10 to come, they don't know each other. The Northwest Frontier Province is huge within the legal borders, and it doesn't really have borders. It crosses to and fro into Afghanistan. The families came from vast distances. Even those who were coming from the big urban centers of Peshawar were spending 2.5-3 hours getting out of the checkpoints that were taking place there. They traveled vast distances. Some of them traveled through the night. And they asked a very simple question to us. They're not stupid people. They said, well, if they're terrorists over there and they just come back, the stigma is never going to go. And if you know anything of all the Pakistani security forces, they'll sell anybody for a bit of money. They've sold loads of people in the past, Guantanamo and where have you. So they don't know. The position of Pakistani government, for once, isn't that unreasonable in this issue. And that is really that if they're a threat to national security, they're a threat to national security in Pakistan, or potentially so. So the other side to the thing is, the major complaint of the families in Pakistan is that whilst the president and the prime minister have made very strong statements about the defending of these students, in practice, they've done absolutely nothing. On the day we had the press conference in Islamabad, there must have been 40, 50 television stations, countless radio stations, dozens upon dozens of print journalists. The next day, there wasn't a single article that we could find in any of the press. That doesn't mean there weren't any. Clearly, there had been put a stop to it, and I think the stop had been put by the military establishment. But it still did come across here, which some of the TV stations here broadcast the press conference, which in turn then got reported over there. So in one sense, really, it's not all doom and gloom. It's not all doom and gloom, because in a sense, one of the reasons this campaign is growing, I think the students are a catalyst to a process that our civil and human rights in this country are being wiped out at a speed which is so fast, we may not know what's coming at us around the corner. So in a sense, many of the old campaigners who are coming forward at the indignity of having young men imprisoned without charge for up to 18 months as Category A prisoners. I don't know, Gareth, whether there were people on terrorist charges who lasted 18 months as Category A prisoners. I don't know. But it's pretty serious. It's nerve-wracking. And it's soul-destroying. So in one sense, when we started organization of the campaign, we didn't know where we were going. We had a very simple position. If they're guilty, charge them. If you've got evidence against them, charge them. Let them know what the evidence is. And I think that's due out on the 6th of July, some form of disclosure. Hence the meeting that we're taking today. Please get actively involved. Go from the meeting and do some letters. It causes problems for the bureaucracy. Write a few letters. On the 27th of July, I think some of the bail hearings will take place. But these are even extraordinary times. How are you going to find a place at which these people are going to be allowed to live? Because if they slap the control orders on them, who's going to be allowed to go there and visit? They're not going to be allowed to. No visitors allowed, no internet allowed. God knows what other restrictions they can put. But coming back into a conclusion, really, for now, that is that we are demanding that an apology be given. We, meaning the campaign, Justice for the Northwest 10. The fact that Tariq has been deported does not mean it's the end of the situation. We're still trying to work out with some strategies of making it difficult for them, the British government and the Pakistani government, and they have a symmetry of interest. The British would dearly like them to go away quietly under duress. The Pakistanis would like them quietly to come back, so neither of them have to rock the boat, because the British pay a lot of money, the Americans pay a lot of money, the Pakistani regime gets a lot of money from this war on terror. They just want to keep it all quiet. In the processes, fundamentals are going wrong. We are linked to this. So we are asking for an apology for the students from the Prime Minister's office. They be allowed to study. Some of the students have 100% record of attendance in 1 year, 98% at the time of their arrest. It's quite remarkable what they... Even if they're going to be held for anything longer, give them the facilities in prison to complete their education. They have only just been allowed to contact their families. I know Nasrullah Khattak told me that at first they were only allowed to speak in English, then they allowed them to speak in Pashto to each other. If you're allowing the so-called terrorists to talk to each other, release them. You know full well they're not terrorists, and I don't think there's any shred of a doubt within the establishment that that's the case. They give them compensation because they've lost huge amounts of money. Those of you from South Asia, you will know when you sell the family silver and come back, the debt is not clearable, certainly in one lifetime. And a few family members have said to us that when these children return, unless they return with some sort of their names cleared and they're allowed to clear the debt, we will never be out of debt. And I've forgotten what the other demands were, but you know, I'm sure they'll come up later. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Tariq. Tariq made mention of the next bail hearing, which will take place on July the 27th. This is at the SIAC, which are special immigration courts at the near the Royal Courts of Justice. We plan to hold a picket at this bail hearings. The date of the bail hearings are scheduled currently for the 27th, but it's never clear whether it will actually take place on that particular date. There's a chance that it might be moved to a different date. We have our website, which is right behind me. We will continue to post if we get more news with regards to when the actual date will be. But at this point in time, at least, we plan to hold a picket between 12 and 12 noon and 3 p.m., just outside the courts there. Thanks.